up, everybody? Welcome into this week's edition of the Porch of AllQuest Baseball Podcast. I'm Eric Kane. So glad to have you guys here with me. VFL Charlie Taylor is going to join the show, co-host here of the Porch, and that's coming up here in a matter of moments. The show is always presented by our friends over at Spivey King and Spivey LLP, being the proud presenting sponsor of the show for the third straight year. So really appreciate them, and you could really appreciate them as well if you have a need. You got a problem, let them find a solution for you. That is TN Trial Lawyers, where they specialize in criminal defense, family law, and personal injury. Get a free consultation today by dialing 423-245-4185. Again, that is 423-245-4185, or online at Spivey King and Spivey LLP. .com. Spivey King and Spivey, proud presenting sponsors of the show. We'll hear from them here in a moment about the midway point of the show. But yeah, so far so good for Tennessee baseball, right? 8-0 is the record. They remain perfect. Of course, we talked about the season opening sweep of Hofstra, where Tennessee won in all three of those games in run rule fashion, 15-0, 18-1, 13-1. We discussed a little bit about Tennessee's 29-4 Tony Vitello era tying 29 runs in that win over UNC Asheville. We're going to talk a little bit about Samford's series here. 5-1 on Friday, 7-3 on Saturday, 11-1 in seven innings on Sunday. And then, of course, Tennessee's 7-5 midweek win over North Alabama. Couple of things. I think Tennessee was faced a little bit with this first bit of adversity this year. I think it'll face more this weekend. I'll get into that as Tennessee heads down to Houston for the Astros Foundation College Classic. I'll preview that after we talk with Charlie here in a moment. But I kind of thought, you know, Samford, it was a team that was one win shy from an NCAA regional, you know, a season ago. It was a team that, you know, returned some players, got picked apart a little bit by the higher up programs in the Power Four landscape. But I kind of thought it would be a decisive win for Tennessee in game one. Ended up being a 4-run victory for Tennessee, 5-1. Saturday, I thought it would be a very, very close game, and Tennessee ended up winning 7-3. But boy, if not for a grand slam there, pinch hit grand slam for Levi Clark in the bottom of the eighth inning. I mean, it was tied 3-3, and Tennessee trailed that entire game before coming back and drawing even Stevens a couple of times and then taking the lead there on the grand slam by Clark. So that was a really good game for Tennessee. It faced some true adversity. And then in game three on Sunday, it was close there for a little bit. Well, not really close, but it was kind of stagnant there. And then the bats came alive there at the end. Again, another pinch hit home run from Levi Clark that followed with a home run there from Stone Lawless to put it over the run rule, and Tennessee won 11-1 in that contest. And North Alabama on Tuesday, I understand some frustrations. I've seen some threads. I've talked to friends as well. I'm on social media. The bats scored 5 runs there in the first inning, and then it's kind of like they went cold a little bit, tacked on another run in the second, another run in the third, and then they went cold, right? And that's unfortunate, but this is midweek baseball. Tennessee threw 10 pitchers, okay? Unless you're in some serious trouble, Tennessee's never going to throw 10 pitchers in a game on Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. But the point of a midweek game is truly a glorified scrimmage. So, yeah, there was Hunter Inslee, you know, held on to the baseball a little bit, and a run came in to score in center field. There was that. The bats went cold. There were things I'm sure Tony Vitello didn't like, but also this is baseball. You play 60-plus games in a season. This is baseball, and more than that, this is midweek baseball. So, sure, you want to handle business, and there are some teams around the country that have not been handling business in the midweek, and Tennessee is not one of them. So, you know, the close win, 7-5, you know, who cares? It's midweek. You got the win. That's the most important thing. But the story for Tennessee on Tuesday night, and that's where I'm going to start, is A.J. Russell. Man, he looked great. And I put notes on the board all last weekend saying, you know, in conversations with people around the program, wouldn't shock me at all if he's going to pitch it, you know, in Houston. I spoke with somebody and they were like, it's going to be Houston because it's too daggum cold here right now. Don't want to throw him in the cold. Tuesday, it turned out to be 70 degrees instead of the 30 degrees it was last weekend. And so it made all the sense in the world. And it made all the sense in the world for him to start the game, go through his normal progression. And because, I mean, he's more comfortable as a starter. He's eventually going to be a starter, just like Tony Vitello said on Tuesday night. He looked great, man. Fastball at 97. Fastball hit 96 a couple different times. Struck out the side there in the first inning. 17 pitches, 11 strikes. What a great moment for not only A.J. Russell, but, you know, for Jeff Wood, Tennessee's, you know, director of, Tennessee's trainer. I don't know the official title. I don't have it in front of me, but Tennessee's trainer. Sports science. There we go. And great moment for him. Great moment for Tennessee as a program because the number one team, according to USA Today coaches poll, in the land, number three by D1 Baseball, consensus top five team, just got that much more dangerous. You got to start somewhere, right? And that's A.J. Russell starting, throwing an inning. We'll see what the next outing looks like, but he's going to build up. But you got to start from somewhere. And you've started that process now with 2 weeks to go in preseason instead of week two of SEC play or week three of SEC play or whatever. So you're going to be building him up, and hopefully he will hit his stride with plenty of season left. And he's got the best fastball in college baseball in terms of movement, according to Baseball America. And he's going to be a first-round pick. So great for him. Awesome for Tennessee on Tuesday night, and just really, really happy for him. Couldn't, you won't meet a nicer kid than A.J. Russell, so I'm really, really happy for him. So that was the story on Tuesday. Will he pitch on Sunday or at some point in the weekend in Houston? We'll see. Tony definitely was not going to go anywhere near that when we asked him on Tuesday night. And to be fair, you got to see how A.J. Russell feels today. You got to see how A.J. Russell feels tomorrow. I get all that. But he was nowhere near going to confirm or deny that he'll pitch in Houston. But I think if he feels good, I think that if he feels rested and he feels ready to go, and if he's scheduled to throw, say, on a Sunday or maybe a Saturday or something, I could see him opening one of those games down there. It would be Sunday. It's not gonna be Friday or Saturday. It's gonna be Liam Doyle against Oklahoma State. It's gonna be Marcus Phillips against Rice, and then I could see AJ opening that game against Arizona on Sunday. But we'll see. If not, it'll be next Tuesday for sure. So, big news of the week: AJ Russell has started to come back. He began his build up process on the mound in games, and so that is a really, really, really good news. Man, what can you say about Levi Clark? That's another one that I've just highlighted for this week. I mean, what a phenomenal start to his collegiate career, and there's no place to put him, right? I mean, he can play first base, he can play corner outfield, he can catch, but the bat is what travels, and his bat is why he continues to get all these opportunities. And so far on the season, in eight games, he's played in seven of them. He started four, all at DH. He is tied for the team lead with three home runs. He is leading the team with 13 RBI. He's got nine hits. All this in just 15 at-bats. The dude can smack a baseball. And so because he can smack a baseball and because he's continuing to smack baseballs, he is going to continue to get opportunities. Someone asked me on the board, either today or yesterday, I can't remember, by the time, Florida comes into town for SEC play, are we going to have a set lineup or is there going to continue to be tinkering all year long? Typically, the lineup gets pretty set, by a couple weeks into SEC play. But I hate to sound like Tony. I mean, the players make the lineup, right? And if nobody is separating themselves, then yeah, sure, you'll continue to see some tinkering. But, Levi Clark is going to continue to hit if he's hitting like this. I mean, it'd be malpractice to not have him out there. And so look more for Levi Clark. Really, really pleased with what I've seen for Jay Abernathy, especially hitting in the nine hole the last couple of games. DH, he played left field on Tuesday. But don't look now, Jay Abernathy, who's played in every game this season, he's hitting .438, leading the team. He's got 16 ABs, got a couple of fewer ABs than like the Rhys Chapmans and the regular starters. But he's got five stolen bases. He's walked five times, has yet to strike out. He had a nice 2 RBI single the other way, looked really, really good, 2-run single. I like what I've seen from Jay Abernathy as well. He is going to continue to play. I know there's only just so many different spots, and I wrote about it in the 3-2-1, but Jay Abernathy is giving Tony Vitello no reason to sit him. Levi Clark is giving Tony Vitello no reason to sit him. Stone Lawless has played really well here lately. How about Stone Lawless playing first base the other day? Now, I said, he made a nice defensive play, and I said in the game thread, he's a catcher too. It kind of reminded me, punters are athletes too. Catchers are athletes. Punters, catchers are athletes, okay? Stone Lawless over there making plays to first base looked really, really good. But I've been so impressed with him. So, yeah, things will start weeding itself out as you go along. But, until then, these guys who are producing are going to play. And guys who have been hot and cold, are going to be hot and cold in the lineup. Dalton Bargo, who had two home runs last week against UNC Asheville in a single inning, one of those being a grand slam, had five ribbies in the game. He's hitting .182 overall in the season. He's not going to get as many opportunities because Jay Abernathy's producing, what I'm saying? So he'll still get some chances, but if you're not producing, you're not going to be in the lineup. So been super impressed with Jay Abernathy, been super impressed with Levi Clark. I love Gavin Keelan and the two-hole man. He's got 12 walks already, one more than Andrew Fisher, who's hitting cleanup. with 11. But Gavin Keelan, 12 walks, 3 home runs, 10 RBI. He's tearing it up right now. I thought Dean Curley should have had 4 hits the other night. He hit the cover off the baseball, only had 1 hit to show for it against North Alabama. But I love Dean Curley in the leadoff spot. And Cannon Peebles, don't look now. Cannon Peebles is coming on, man. So you love all these options for Tennessee. And again, this is a big reason why Tennessee's hitting 356 as a team right now. And that's awesome to see. One other thing I want to mention before we get into our conversation with Charlie Taylor. At the time of this recording, the preliminary hearing has not wrapped up for Alberto Ozuna that took place on Wednesday. It took place on Wednesday afternoon. As I mentioned on the board, and again, this might be outdated by the time you hear this, whenever I release it Thursday, so if so, I apologize. But I did mention on the board earlier this week and talking with some people that know the legal system much more than I do, very unlikely the judge rules from the bench on Wednesday. So not like it'll drag out an awful long time, but I was told maybe within the week you'll have an answer one way or the other that yes, he was granted injunction, no, he was not granted injunction, because again, this is time sensitive. So he could rule from the bench on Wednesday, but the likely case, and again, by the time if you're listening to this and this is out of date, I apologize, the likely case is that the judge won't rule from the bench. So we'll be waiting potentially the rest of this week, maybe in the first couple of days of next week. But again, everybody I've talked to is still very confident. If you follow along with Diego Pavia Vanderbilt, everything that's happened in the Alberto Ozuna case has mirrored that. It's mirrored it completely. So next up is the preliminary injunction hearing. We'll see if he's granted injunction. If he's granted injunction, he's eligible. If he's not, he's not. It's as simple as that, to my understanding, as it's been told to me. but again, I cover sports. I do not cover courtrooms. So I'm learning on the fly here as well. But even, if he is granted injunction, I mean, that's just another guy you got to figure it out. Like, he'll get looks at first base. He'll get looks at designated hitter. Plus, he's got a right-handed bat that you covet. That's a big reason why Tennessee went out and got him. So I'll be super intrigued to see kind of where he is in the mix as well. But that's going on Wednesday, and hopefully we'll hear something by the end of the week. If not, probably early next week. I thought potentially if they ruled on it, then he could play in Houston if he was granted injunction, but I've been told that it's probably not going to be ruled from the bench on Wednesday. So we'll see about that. A couple other notes here before I get into Charlie Taylor, and then on the back half of that, we're going to talk about the weekend coming up. Been super impressed with Tanner Franklin. I think Tanner Franklin's going to be a huge piece for Tennessee. Nate Snead obviously looked good back in his piggyback role that he pitched in last weekend. You ask Nate Snead to do anything, he's going to do it. Tegan Coons looked awesome in his debut on Tuesday. Again, got sick, was running like, insider baseball here. He's running like 103 temperature. He's really, really sick. And then tried to even come back to the ballpark and play the next day. This was opening weekend. So that set him back a little bit. But he made his debut on Tuesday, looked really good doing it. Quick 1-2-3 inning. His first inning out, came back out for another inning of work, struck out, walked a guy, and then he was done. Dylan Loy made his season debut, gave up a leadoff double, but worked out of it, and I thought that was awesome, stranding some runners at third base. Ryan Combs, clearly he's going to be a guy that's used in the back end of the bullpen. I thought Austin Breedlove looked really good the other night, and I'm a big fan of Thomas Crabtree as well. Again, just so many guys who can be used at the disposal of Frank Anderson, Josh Reynolds, Kirby Cannell, all those guys down there in the Tennessee bullpen. Just a whole lot of stuff. So awesome stuff so far that we've seen, but I think we're going to learn a lot this weekend. And we'll talk about this weekend at the Astros College. The Astros Foundation? Astros Foundation College Classic coming up this weekend, with Tennessee takes on Oklahoma State on Friday at 4:05 Eastern Time, Rice on Saturday at 12:05 Eastern Time, and Arizona on Sunday morning at 11:05 Eastern Time. Your boy is going to be in-house at Minute Maid Park. I'm going to call it Minute Maid Park until I don't. I know it's called something else now, but I'm really, really looking forward to seeing Tennessee baseball this weekend, and that's coming up, and we'll have all the coverage for you right here at VolQuest.com. Charlie Taylor's coming up next. Do want to give you give a shout-out and a shout-out to our friends, our presenting sponsor. That is Spivey King and Spivey LLP. You got a problem, let them find a solution for you. T&Trial Lawyers, they specialize in criminal defense, family law, personal injury, examples of which can be DUI, assault, divorce, personal injury such as car wrecks. All those things. 80 years of combined experience, Spivey King and Spivey LLP provides representation throughout state and federal courts in Northeast Tennessee. The firm has a vast amount of trial experience. This one's been in place for 43 years, with this partnership forming in 2012, also having partners who are energized for today's modern legal demands. Practicing primarily in Northeast Tennessee, the Tri-Cities of Sullivan County, as well as Hawkins County, Washington County, and surrounding areas, the firm has won multiple awards to attorneys who've also been rated by super lawyers and Mid-South Real Trial Experience. Whether you've been injured in a car accident, need help with a divorce, help with custody of your children, or have been accused of a crime, Spivey King and Spivey LLP, they can help you. Go see them in person at 142 Cherokee Street, Kingsport, Tennessee. Call this number for a free consultation, 423-245-4185. Again, 423-245-4185, or visit them online at SpiveyKingAndSpiveyLLP.com. Spivey King and Spivey LLP, you got a problem? Let them find a solution for you. TN Trial Lawyers. Charlie Taylor joining us back on the porch for the second straight week. Xander Seacrest, he's literally going all over the place of Florida playing some spring training games, so we're going to let that slide. But Chuck's back on, and man, first and foremost, Tennessee, another perfect week. Swept Samford, took care of UNC Asheville in the midweek. Of course, I guess that was last week. And then, of course, this past Tuesday night, a win over North Alabama. Tennessee is 8-0 on the season, ascended to number one in the country, according to the USA Today coaches poll, so that's something. But big takeaways from Tennessee's perfect week, the second week of the season.
Yeah, sorry that the people aren't getting their Xander Seacrest this week, but it's only right that I'm on after the catchers go back-to-back.
Levi Clark, that's what you told me. I'm like, Wallace. You know what? Yeah, it was meant to be. Yeah,
that's right. No, I think we talked about it last week, but I think the best thing that I saw was that they had to fight to win that game on Saturday a little bit. And all three games, it wasn't like they just steamrolled them. You know, I thought Samford played well, and I thought Tennessee, I thought we hung in there and kind of we got to see a little bit of what we're going to look like when the fire gets a little hot.
How weird is it to say Tennessee and then we, and then you say we? It's like, we're trying to say Tennessee now. It's like,
yeah,
you can say we, man. You put your 4 years 100%. Into it, but it's got to be a weird, weird feeling for you. But yeah, man, I couldn't agree more about the adversity there on Tuesday. I mean, Tennessee trailed the entire game. They came back and, you know, pulled even a couple of times, and then Levi Clark, that huge blast, grand slam in the bottom of the eighth inning. I thought that was a really, really good game because – it's not like they played poorly. It's just, you know, baseball, sometimes you're not going to have your best stuff, and Samford's a pretty good ball club. How much can, you know, Tennessee take from a game like that where, you know, in the first 7-8 games you weren't hit with any adversity, but, you know, that was a good exercise to go through that adversity, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, you talked about it last week too, how Nate Snead has kind of been the Swiss Army knife towards the end of last year, and it looks like it's going to be that way again this year. I think we joke about the TBD on Sunday, but I really do think this last week it was a true TBD, and maybe Snead was in line for that or maybe not. But I think the biggest takeaway is that he was kind of the, you know, oh crap, like, oh crap guy. We need somebody to go in there and just a steady presence on the mound. And I think that says a lot about Coach V's confidence in Nate. Just that he was the guy he turned to immediately in that fifth inning, I believe, when it was getting a little dicey.
Yeah, we're talking about that Saturday game. Tennessee wins 7-3, the grand slam in the bottom of the eighth inning by Levi Clark, and boy, what a home run that was. Yeah, that is game two, right? Yeah, okay, I'm not making that up. But yeah, Marcus Phillips, Nate Snead came in, he got the win, pitched really, really well. Marcus Phillips started that game, and I'm the biggest Marcus Phillips fan. I want this to work for him to be in the starting rotation. He's got great stuff. Man, he retired 11 straight at one point. I don't care who you're playing against or whatever. Like, you know, that's good. What did you see and what did you like from Marcus Phillips in his outing?
Again, another step forward in terms of his presence on the mound. His stuff looked good. Throwing strikes for the most part. You know, there's fifth inning got a little weird with the pickoff to second and stuff like that. But I thought the biggest takeaway was when it did get weird, he didn't really let it, you know, just meltdown all around him. He's hung in there, stayed confident, looked good. So he gave his team a chance to win. And if he does that every weekend, he's going to be pretty successful this year.
You know, after the game, we'll talk about Friday's game here in a moment, but after the game on Friday and post-game media, you've been in there with us, you know, the little semicircle, and we all, you know, ask all the questions. The theme of it was just the different looks and the combo, the 1-2 punch from Liam Doyle to Tanner Franklin, and how, and Cannon Peebles talked about how they just work so well off each other, how they both throw hard, but they're kind of different and all that. One's righty, one's lefty. I think I mentioned this to you last week. I'm not a huge fan whatsoever of Marcus Phillips to Nate Snead because I think they're too similar. So I kind of asked Tony in that post-game press conference. I'm like, you know, we talked about the 1-2 punch last night. What do you like about going from Phillips to Snead? And he's like, well, more than anything, it's – and I thought this was a great answer, and it was honest. He's like, more than anything, we get to our third pitcher or our fourth pitcher of the weekend, and it's not Nate Snead. Like, how can we justify that because he's so good? And I was like, well, I never really thought about it that way, but I think that makes a whole lot of sense. Like, he's too good not to throw and go win you a series if the opportunity presents itself on Saturday.
Yeah, and I mean – 98 from the left side, and then Franklin throwing 100 from the right side, and then Phillips and Snead running it close to triple digits. There's really not a bad option there. So, and they're all going to compete and throw strikes. So I think Coach V is pretty confident with all four of them.
Liam Doyle, 25 strikeout. I think he's gotten like 32, 33 outs in the Tennessee career, 25 strikeouts. The pace is not going to keep up, but obviously, he's put in the work. I mean, he got here. He dropped about 20 pounds. The velo went up. He looks good. The movement's there. Just another phenomenal effort. And again, Sanford is not Hofstra. Sanford was a game shy of a regional play last year. But he carved him up and looked really, really good doing it. I mean, he looks every bit of an ace that you see on Friday nights.
Just dominated him with the fastball again.
Yeah. I mean, it was very, very cold. So it's like, it's almost like you couldn't work to throw much else because the grip was tough. But I mean, I guess if you don't need anything else, the fastball is the only thing you got. You know, just continue to throw it.
Yeah, you can tell though how quick that gets on hitters and how overpowering of a pitch that is. And obviously, he's going to need more than just the fastball as you get deeper into the season. But having a pitch like that as a go-to is pretty special.
Yeah, no doubt. Tennessee has a bevy of catchers at their disposal, right? All four of the catchers on the active roster, I know a couple of them play different positions, but all four of your catching options on the active roster have been playing a ton, right? You got Cannon Peebles, who's off to a really good start at the plate. You've got Stone Lawless, who is doing great, played a little first base as well. Dalton Bargo plays all over the place. And then, of course, you got Levi Clark. And I mean, Levi Clark, I had it pulled up here a moment ago. I mean, like, he's tied for the lead for the team lead in home runs. He's leading the team with 13 RBI. He's got, like, 10 less at-bats than, like, the regulars of, like, the Reese Chapmans and the Keelans and, the Inslees and all them. But he's doing all this in less at-bats. And, I mean, like, I know it's difficult for Tony to make a lineup card, but, like, you can't keep this guy out right now, right? I mean, he's hitting too well.
Well, and it's also – you know, it's not like he's been the guy from day one in the starting lineup every day. He's coming off the bench, and you talked about it, cold weather this weekend. He was sitting there in the cold for seven innings and comes in the eighth and hits that bomb, and then I think he does it the next day, too, off the bench. So, you know, that's impressive, and that I think that Coach V really values that, guys who are staying involved in the game even when they might not see their name in the starting lineup card. So Levi's a stud. He's another catcher from Georgia, so I appreciate that. but he's awesome. And the other thing, too, is you can kind of tell guys up there who just look the part and look comfortable, too. Trey Lipscomb, his first 3 years was awesome and a great teammate. But that fourth year, you could see the switch flipped where, you know, he's puffing his chest out, his shoulders are back, his chin is up, walking to the plate, he's got the swagger. Levi's kind of already got that as a freshman, and you can just tell that he's comfortable up there. If he's down 0-2 in the count, if umpire screws him over on a call, there's not much that's really phasing him up there.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's a lot of freshmen in this class, and you know, guys that came in with you and guys that have come in the last couple of years that could have taken professional opportunities and gone on. But like, I remember looking at Dean Curley last year, and I'm just like, that dude looks like a big leaguer. And then like, when I look at Levi Clark, I'm like, why did that dude come to college? Like, that dude just looks different. I mean, he's going to be a stud, I feel like. And especially like working in this program with Q, this strength and conditioning program, you know, with the nutrition program as well. I mean, there's no telling how good that guy can be. I'm intriguing to see, like, and again, we don't know right now, but as, you know, his years evolve and as this year evolves defensively, like, where does he best fit in defensively? Is it behind the plate? Is it first base? I mean, right now, it's just you got to have that bat somewhere. So he's been DHing a lot, but he's going to be an intriguing one to watch because, I mean, again, he could be, you know, playing his pro ball right now and kind of moving up the ranks a little bit.
Yeah, the key thing, like I said, is he's got that belief in himself. He's got the mindset of that you need to compete in the SEC, and the physical development, the defensive development, that's all going to come just from that's why you come to Tennessee, is because the coaches develop you and turn you into a more polished pro prospect. So I'm sure he could have, you know, gotten snagged pretty high in the draft this last draft, but you know, if he keeps working like he's doing here, he's going to be just fine.
Two pinch hit home runs, one being a game winning grand slam this past weekend against Samford. You talked about a moment ago coming off the bench, and it's super cold and all that, but just coming off the bench in general, I mean, you did that a lot, come in and catch late in ball games and stuff. I mean, how difficult is that? Like, you got to stay locked in, engaged all game long, and then not only that mentally, but like your body's got to be ready to go in there and compete. I mean, you can, like, I know you guys run to the foul pole, like, you know, between the third and the fourth inning or whatever, but like, how do you stay ready?
Yeah, the runs down to the foul pole were, my hip flexor wasn't really agreeing with me towards the end of my career. So I was more of a jump rope guy in the back of the dugout. But no, you got to stay locked into the game. And Coach V can tell a lot of times who's doing a good job of that and who's maybe not. So obviously Levi is doing a good job, and plenty of other guys are capable of coming off the bench. But it's tough. It's really tough. I like coming in and, you know, as a pinch hitter, there's pinch hit Pete Durkay a few years ago. His thing was he would always swing at the first strike that he got. That's what he told me. So you don't want to be tentative or hesitant when you come off the bench. You want to be out there ready to go, ready to compete. And we've got plenty of guys that are going to do that this year.
I don't know why I just thought of this. It's kind of random, but I know as a catching group, you guys all play a hand into it. Like, everybody's got to go catch a bullpen every now and again. But during games, did Stone catch like the guys in the bullpen for home games last year?
Yeah, it was mostly Stone. There was a few times that I would go down there and help out as well. But speaking to the depth of the catcher room that you were talking about earlier, that's huge, because all four of those guys can really swing it, and it gives you a lot of flexibility to be able to say, you know, we can catch one of them, DH the other one, and not feel worried about our defense behind the plate late in the game. Yeah. So that's a huge asset to have, and it also speaks to just the selflessness of the catcher group this year as well.
Yeah, you know, in football, Josh Hopple ran a lot of 12 personnel this year, two tight ends. He didn't do that a lot the first couple of years because he only had two tight ends that he liked to play, that he felt comfortable playing. This year he had three, and so he could run two at a time. And Tony was kind of talking about that earlier this weekend. He was like, it's funny, I think he said it on Sunday, and then Tuesday you see the lineup. He was saying, like, we have four guys that can catch. We have some serious depth, so it's great to have Stone, but, like, really what I love about this is having, you know, Bargo and Levi. Like, I feel good about it. And then the next game or whatever was, like, literally Stone was at first, Peebles behind the dish, Bargo was somewhere, like, or like Clark was DHing. Like, three of the four catchers were in the starting lineup. I mean, that's wild. So that's a really good point. It's just the quality of the depth, the versatility and all that, and I think that's going to help Tennessee out a lot this year. A guy that you caught a ton the last couple of years, A.J. Russell. He made his return to the mound. And looked great doing it, man. I mean, he struck out the side, 17 pitches, 11 strikes, hit 97 at one point, 96 a couple of times. Looked calm, cool, in control. what a moment for him. And I mean, you can speak better than anybody. I mean, how proud and how excited were you to know that he was going to pitch yesterday in a game and to see how he performed?
Yeah, I didn't know, honestly. So that was pretty cool that I had no idea he was coming back that quick. And I think it speaks to the work that he's done getting ready to get back on the mound again, and also Woody and the rest of the training staff and the coaches. But no, it's obviously the three strikeouts are cool, but just him getting back on the mound and feeling good and getting it through an inning there is a huge win. And I'm sure they'll take it slow and his arm will be the priority, but what a weapon to have back for the Vols.
Everybody talks about his fastball. What makes his fastball so special?
Yeah, it's just got the, it's tough to explain, just the late rise. When I feel like when I was younger, most coaches always told me when I was pitching, you know, live low in the zone, don't leave it up in the zone. But a lot of these guys that, well, I didn't throw 98. So a lot of these guys that have the spin rate and the velocity, they can win at the top of the zone as well. And I think you see a lot of guys late and missing under his fastballs.
Yeah, well, it was certainly hitting the other day. I mean, how difficult was it for him last year? I mean, he wanted to be out there. You guys all want to be out there when you're hurt. But, I mean, seeing you guys continue to win and win and win and just knowing, like, man, I just want to help. I just want to contribute somehow. Like, and then finally they had to shut him down and he had to have surgery. But, you know, from your perspective, how difficult was that for him last year to kind of see all the success? And, of course, he's a team guy. He was dogpiling with you guys in a sling. But how difficult was it for him seeing all the success and really just not being able to be a part of it?
Yeah, I think it was really tough, especially with how he started the year, too. He had a great outing. And he countless times he was throwing live hitters to me and Stone. We did it in Knoxville a few times. We did it in Nashville before the Vandy series, and just trying to get him back out there. And it never worked out for him, but he wanted to be out there so bad. Like you say, he's a good teammate, and I'm sure it meant a lot to him last night to be back out there.
He brought up Woody in the postgame press conference. So did Tony Botello, man. The casual fan will just hear us refer to him as Woody or whatever, and there's like, oh, trainer, you know. But he's so much more than that. Like, what, from a guy that was in this program for a long time, man, what does Woody mean to you guys?
He's awesome. More than anything, he just makes me laugh. I'd go in there every day and dap him up, say, what's up, Wood? But no, he doesn't like the spotlight a lot, but he's in there working every day with us, just getting everybody feeling right, doing the exercises they need to be doing. He communicates with Q all the time, and they're a really good team.
Yeah, I mean, and deservedly so. Everybody talks about Tony and Frank and, you know, Josh and, you know, Ross is back. But, I mean, it's the unsung heroes of, you know, winning a national title is the Woodies and the Qs for sure. You're about to go, Tennessee's about to go to the Houston Foundation College Showdown or whatever, going to the Minute Maid. You guys played in Phoenix a couple years ago. You played in Arlington last year. I don't know if you were on the team or not, but I think it was 2020. Played at Minute Maid again in the Round Rock or whatever. Were you on that team? Yeah, you were on the team, weren't you?
Round Rock was the COVID year, the year before I started.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. Okay. Well, anyway, you guys have gone to these early season tournament style, I guess you can call it, weekends. You know, this one's a couple weeks into the year, but usually the very beginning. Does the preparation change any, especially for a catcher, like, you know, or a hitter, I guess, studying the pitcher's tendencies and all that, but knowing that it's just a one-off. You're going to play Oklahoma State, you're going to play Rice, you're going to play Arizona. Does the preparation change at all?
No, it shouldn't change. And really, that's probably going to be Coach V's message to the team is this is still baseball, treat it the same way. The old Hoosiers movie clip where they go in the basketball gym at Butler, I think, and they're measuring the length of the court, the height to the basket, and it's all, you know, 10 feet and whatever the length of the court is. And his whole point is it's the same game. The, you know, the bases are still 90 feet. The mound's the same distance. There may be more fans out there, but it's still baseball. So I think that's going to be Coach V's biggest thing is the preparation shouldn't change. It should be the same. you should still go out there with the goal to just compete, and you're going to figure out this weekend who some of those guys are that really relish when the spotlight gets a little brighter.
Sure, it's all the same, but still, and it's not a packed house, but I mean, you played on a field last year where the team just won the World Series. They're going to, it's not called Minute Maid anymore. I don't know what the hell they call it now, but it should be Minute Maid because that's an awesome name. But you're going to, you know, the home of the Houston Astros. Trash cans beating aside. Okay, I'm done. But I mean, when you play in those settings, I mean, that's, I mean, you almost kind of get starstruck a little bit, right?
Yeah, the adrenaline is definitely going pretty good. And it's really about who can get that under control and use it the right way. You don't want to let the nerves and the adrenaline. Being nervous is not a bad thing. If you're not nervous, you're probably lying to a certain degree. But it's how you use that nervousness. Do you use it, you know, okay, let me get my breath under me, and then let me use those nerves to, you know, enhance my focus or my ability to compete? Or do I let it, you know, overcome me with fear and I'm playing hesitant and not being aggressive like I need to on a typical game? So like I said, you're going to figure out which guys, at least at the start of the year, you know, they could evolve as the year goes on, but you're going to see early on who really loves that spotlight and who, you know, it might get to them a little bit.
Tennessee's got a big weekend coming up, and of course we'll talk to Chuck, probably maybe Xander next week, and we'll kind of recap it all. But out the door, I got a lot of requests after you joined the show last week. A lot of praise for you doing a great job. A lot of people want you to talk about that regional in 2022. We'll deep dive into it later, but I did want to ask you kind of out the door, man, the Tennessee fan base adored you after that weekend. What did that mean for you when you came to the plate and they're giving you standing ovations and you really kind of endeared yourself into this fan base that weekend. How I know it was awesome for your parents. How cool was it for you?
Yeah, my parents, that was an unbelievable weekend for them and for me as well, obviously. But I think I told you last week off record that, you know, when I figured out I was starting that day sometime around lunch, I didn't eat another bite of food the rest of the day. I was so nervous, but it was Drew Gilbert gave me a call on the way to the field, and he said, look, you're not going to hit a 6-run homer. You don't have to do anything special. We got you. All you need to do is just do your job and take care of the pitching staff, and the rest of us got you. And I think that the fans just took their cue from my teammates. My teammates had my back. Coach V had my back. All that was very apparent and obvious, and the fans just want to be a part of that vibe that we have going in the dugout. And they saw how my teammates had my back. So I think they said, hey, why not? Why don't we have Chuck's back as well? So obviously that meant the world to me. that's one of those things where it's every time I, you know, the further I get away from it, the fonder I look back on it. So.
Yeah, no doubt. And again, I do want to do a deep dive on that at some point, because that was a huge moment, obviously, and a very special, special season for you guys. Chuck, man, great job. Great insights as always. And anything you're looking for specifically this weekend as Tennessee goes and takes on Oklahoma State, Rice, and Arizona?
Yeah, I mean, like I said last week, I want to keep seeing who in the bullpen is going to step up and take some of these high leverage innings when it's tight, or, you know, when there's a big situation, who do we go to get those outs? And then on the offensive side, I want to keep seeing these hitters develop. I've loved the way that Reese Chapman looks up there. He looks very comfortable in year three. Obviously Levi's done a great job. I love Jay's swing. And then some of the older guys, the veterans, they look like veterans up there. So I want to see, as the level of competition goes up and the venue changes, I just want to see how, you know, our bullpen steps up, and also how our lineup continues to grow and have quality at bats.
One of the coolest things so far, in my opinion, to begin this season, it's early, but it's been seeing Reese Chapman. He's got a hit in every single game. He's been awesome. Hopefully that continues for him this weekend, no doubt. Chuck, thanks as always, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Yes, sir. Go Vols.
Great stuff there from Charlie Taylor, VFL, and a guy that knows a lot more about baseball than you or I, and has certainly knows the ins and outs of the Tony Vitello clubhouse and dugout and the culture and all that and more. So really, really enjoyed catching up with Charlie Taylor again. We'll catch up with Xander Seacrest here soon. I mean, he's off doing his minor league baseball thing, pitching and staying busy, and Port St. Lucie and you know, all these other places that he's down there, Lakeland. So best of luck to Xander Seacrest. We'll have him back on the porch here pretty soon. Quickly, just a couple of minutes left. Not going to spend an awful lot of time simply because it's early in the season, and you know, we'll talk about it more on the board throughout the week. But Tennessee this weekend at the Houston Foundations College Classic. Again, Oklahoma State coming up on Friday, 4:05 Eastern time. Rice Saturday at 12:05 p.m. Eastern time around noon. And Arizona Sunday morning at 11:05 Eastern time. John Wilkerson, to my understanding, will be there, so there'll be an audio stream of the coverage. So many people throughout the week, and I've been trying to answer all of them whenever I see them, have asked, where can we watch these games? Well, this is from the Foundation's College Classic website. All 9 of the tournament games will be televised on Space City Home Network, available on the channel in the entirety of the Astros' 5-state viewing era. Well, for us here in East Tennessee, that does not, you know, do well for us. But if you're listening and you are in the entirety of the Astros' 5-state viewing area, then check it out on Space City Home Network. 7 of the 9 games will be on primary channel, with Saturday morning and afternoon games being aired live on Space City Home Network's alternate channel. Additionally, this is what you guys want to listen to. All 9 games will be streamed live without blackout or paywall, okay, at astros.com. and on the Astros X, Facebook, and YouTube channels. So all you got to do is go to on their social media channels, X, Facebook, go to YouTube, type in Houston Astros, go to astros.com. They're going to be streaming these games live, no blackouts, no paywall. That's what you want. That is the easiest way to watch Tennessee this weekend in the Astros Foundation College Classic. All right, quickly, at the time of this recording, all these opponents play Wednesday midweek games. I had to get this done before Wednesday night. Because I got to edit and it's got to get out there on Thursday. So I'm missing some stats and everything from Wednesday night midweek games. But overall in the season, Oklahoma State 3-3 on the year. They were the preseason Big 12 favorites. Okay, Big 12 preseason player of the year is Nolan Schumbart, who is their first baseman, I believe. No, right fielder, corner outfielder. Really, really good player. So this is a good team. It was preseason ranked. It's still ranked in one of the polls. 2024, they were a regional team. They hosted an NCAA regional where they lost to Florida. Florida, of course, went on to play in the college the College World Series. 2024, 42-19, the record, 19-9 mark. They won the Big 12, and again, they're the preseason favorite. Josh Holliday is the coach. This is his 13th season. Returning 4 players with double-digit home runs from the 2024 roster. They have to replace their entire 2024 weekend rotation, which was second to, you know, hardly anybody in college baseball season ago. So far this season, they played in the Shriners Children's College Showdown in Arlington to begin the year. Tennessee played in that last year. Their wins, 12-3 over Louisville there, and then they won 2 games against UT Arlington in a weekend series. Their losses, 2 of which have went in Arlington opening weekend of the college baseball season. The Shriners, they lost to Clemson 6-5, Texas 14-8. And they did beat Texas State 4-2 in the midweek. Batting so far, again, Nolan Schubart, the preseason Big 12 Player of the Year, 455 on the year, 9 ribbies, 7 runs, 8 walks. He's going to be a future first-rounder. Garrett Scholl, the left fielder, hitting over .500 so far. He scored 5 runs. Colin Brueggemann, I believe is how you say it, hitting .357, 2 home runs, tied for the team lead, leading the team with 12 ribbies. He was a preseason All Big 12 selection as well. So Jason Jones, an Arkansas transfer, he's in the starting lineup. Aiden Moella is a guy to watch out for as well. Preseason All Big 12. So that lineup's pretty stacked. On the mound, you got Gabe Davis, who was primarily used as a reliever a season ago, but he was the opening day starter for Oklahoma State so far this year. He's got 1 start. That was opening day. 2 appearances, though, 5.06 ERA. Again, he played for the college national team this past summer. Preseason All Big 12. He's a guy that's going to be really good for Oklahoma State this year. So we'll see if he starts or if he relieves, but he did make the opening day start this year for Oklahoma State. Harrison Bodnorf, I believe is how you say his name. He started 2 games. He's a lefty. 5.40 ERA. Hunter Watkins, he started two games for the Cowboys, 1-0 record, 7.88 ERA. So they're figuring it out. It's early in the season, but the lineup for Oklahoma State is going to be a good one. Rice on Saturday. This is the, if you want to pick one, the easier game of the trio. It's certainly going to be Rice. 2-4 on the season. Preseason pick last in the American Athletic Conference. Returned 60% of his pitching from 2024. But that was a team that went 23-36, 11-16 in AAC play. Head coached by Jose Cruz Jr. If you know that name, former big leaguer, former number 3 overall pick by the Seattle Mariners. Won a gold glove in 03. Was second rookie of the year voting to Nomar Garcia-Parra. Played for Team Puerto Rico in the 06 WBC. So that's a name you know. He's the head coach of Rice. They've got two wins on the year. They beat Sam Houston in the midweek. They beat USC once in a 3-game series. They played in the Puerto Rico Challenge to begin the year. They lost to Villanova, to Michigan, and to Virginia. Virginia, who was ranked as high as number 2 at the beginning of the season. They've also lost to USC in one of those games, but they did win that series 2-1. You know, the lineup, Trey Duffield is kind of the leader of the clubhouse in 385. Blaine Brown, exciting freshman two-way player. He plays right field, hitting over 300. On the mound, he's got 3 appearances. He started one game. He's got a 3.37 ERA, so watch out for Blaine Brown, exciting two-way player that's probably going to pitch and hit this weekend. On the mound, really the only guy you need to worry about, at least on paper, Davion Hixon, opening day starter, preseason all AAC. He's got 96 mile per hour fastball, slider changeup, 64 strikeouts last year, 6 saves, really, really good player again. And, he's pitched 9 innings, has a 1.00 ERA. He's the one to look out for Rice on the mound. Finally, Arizona, preseason top 25 team. They're 4-3 on the year. Began the season 0-3 again. Another team that played in the Shriners Children's College Showdown. 36-23, the record last year. 20-10 in Pac-12. No more Pac-12. They are the Pac-12 tournament champs. They have a 4-year streak of making the NCAA regional play. Last year, they hosted one, but they did go 0-2. Chip Hale's back as manager. Lineup is easily the strength, one of the best in the Big 12 that has to offer this year. Again, like Oklahoma State, lost an elite rotation from a season ago, so that's a big question mark entering the year. They have wins so far. Again, 4-3 is the record at the time of this recording, not taking into account a Wednesday midweek game. They got wins over New Mexico, and they swept San Diego. They have losses to Ole Miss, Clemson, and Louisville. Again, all 3 in the Shriner Children's College Showdown to begin the year. In the order, Aaron Walton, center fielder, hitting 350. He's one to watch out for. Mason White, the shortstop. The right fielder and leadoff man, Brendan Summerhill. Those are kind of the star players to look out for in the lineup. They got a lot of pop, some sneaky power from Summerhill in the leadoff spot. Mason White's going to be a high draft pick. And on the mound, Colin McKinney was the opening day starter. He's got a 1.23 ERA, 7 innings and a third, 4 strikeouts, and 4 walks. Also look out for Smith Bailey. He started 2 games for Arizona so far this year. He's not allowed to run, 9 innings, 8 strikeouts, 1 walk, probably the best control pitcher that Arizona has. So I do think Tennessee is going to be tested. I do think Tennessee can hit a little bit of adversity this weekend, but I'm excited to see what it looks like, right? You know, if Tennessee goes down there and loses 1, not the end of the world. Tennessee goes down there and loses 2, okay, let's regroup. Tennessee goes down there, like I'm expecting, win all these games because Tennessee, in my opinion, the best team in the country. Still, I want to see how they win these games. I want to see how they're challenged, and I want to see Tennessee fight through adversity, just like it did game 2 against Samford, and just like it did some Tuesday in the midweek against North Alabama. But Tennessee hadn't seen a lot of adversity yet this year. They will this weekend, and it's going to be a great weekend down in Houston for the Astros Foundation's College Classic. All the coverage you want, all weekend long, right here at VolQuest.com on the Journal's Quarters. I'll have pictures, write-up, transcripts, videos, all that and more, and constant conversation, 4 quick takes, all that you could possibly want, all the baseball coverage this weekend from Houston, right here at VolQuest.com. Appreciate you guys for joining us here. Appreciate Spivey King and Spivey for making this show possible. If you've got a problem, let them find a solution for you. T-Intral Lawyers, 423-245-4185, 423-245-4185. That is the number for a free consultation. Check them out online at SpiveyKingAndSpiveyLOP.com. As always, great stuff there from Charlie Taylor. We'll be back next week recapping this week and looking ahead to St. Bonaventure and the final non-conference weekend series of the year before SEC play begins. All that and more right here on The Porch, a VolQuest baseball podcast. Appreciate you guys.